To say HBO's flagship series, Game of Thrones, was a cultural phenomenon is seven hells of an understatement. When it was running, you couldn't find anyone who wasn't talking about it, nor were opinions kept silent during its divisive final season. So when the people at HBO announced a spinoff would be coming down the pipeline, opinions were all over the place. But having arrived at the end of the first season of that spinoff, it's clear that any concerns have been put to rest, with a stellar cast, outstanding visuals, and the tense and treacherous politics we've come to expect from the lords and ladies of Westeros, House of the Dragon has proven itself just as engrossing a story as the original. We'll be talking about all that and much more on this fire and blood-fueled episode of Script or Screen.
Welcome back, lords and ladies, to a wonderful new episode of Script or Screen, your number one source for incredibly awkward family reunions. I am one of your co-hosts, Christopher House of Kitchen, and alongside me is my co-host, Zach House of Strachman.
That's me.
Zach, how are you today?
Oh, I'm good. I'm tired because I decided I was going to wake up at like 5 a.m. to watch our universe do cool stuff in the sky. I woke up for the blood moon.
Oh, did all the lovely undead beings of Hyrule reawaken and attack you in the night?
The Bokoblins, the Moblins, they all came out. Zelda was like, be careful, Link. I'm like, who's Link? And she's like, shut up, don't worry about it.
And then you're like, I forgot to take my medicine this morning.
Yeah, yeah. Someone said, Zach, put down the sword.
I had many people send me photos. Being a space enthusiast, I did go to bed super late last night, and so I missed it. But I did do other very important things this morning.
Oh, that's
I
good.
I had my annual physical. Ooh. I went and voted, because the midterm elections are today.
Ooh.
Watch some good television.
That's, you know what? I love good television.
That's the thing. And I want to make a little addition to our cold open and just remind the audience, I was one of those people that was not talking about Game of Thrones for some time.
You were. You were a holdout.
I was. But, like, you know, for no reason. Maybe there was a reason. But not that it was important. I
feel like when a lot of people are hyping something up, sometimes there is a desire to just be like, I don't want to.
I mean, I don't know if it was as much of a desire as I don't want to. It was more like, okay, that void is already being filled by literally everyone else. Like, I'm good.
Yeah.
But that's not what we do here at Script or Screen. In fact, all we do is talk about television, movies, and all the nonsense in between.
You can't get away from it.
No, you can't. We can't get away from it. And in an effort to help people find it, they could find that Script or Screen on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube. And they can go to our website, www.scriptorscreen.com or anchor.fm/scriptorscreen. There they can find all the past, present, and future episodes we have to offer. House of the Dragon.
Chris.
Is it Zach?
House of the Dragon.
This is
let me stop you there. Okay, so House of the Dragon. Let me tell you something. I think one of the biggest issues Game of Thrones faced as it was going through its lifetime, one of the biggest things working against it was that George Martin is like an absurdly slow writer. So much so that he's about to put out his second book in between the writing the last entry of the Game of Thrones Song of Ice and Fire series and the one that's coming up next. He'll make fun of himself and he'll be like, I'm working on it, but yeah. So I think it was like around like season 5, maybe like the middle of season 6, where they just ran out of material, and you can tell. I still like the last few seasons of Game of Thrones. I think they're, you know, even on its worst day, it's still better than like 99% of television.
Uh-huh.
But you can tell there was a difference. So it's interesting that now we have us a show that does not have that problem and won't have that problem because the story is written. The whole dang thing.
But here's the thing.
Uh-oh.
It's the interpreting of all the events that happen in between. Like another show, Zach, this show faced a funny, I don't want to say issue, but like the thing that they got to explore was all the in-betweens and all the time that the book didn't get to go into detail with.
So, yes and no and sort of.
Okay.
So, like, yes. No. I mean, so you're right in that the main core Song of Ice and Fire books don't, like, they talk about it, but it's not really, like, it's not explored deeply. And then
there's
George
no
Martin.
Prose.
Right. And then George Martin, sorry, I just dropped my tea on the floor. He comes out with the book Fire and Blood, which is all about, like, all the Targaryen, the family lineage and all the events that happened from when Aegon the Conqueror came to Westeros till the most recent stuff. And so we have a roadmap of like the big events and some brief explanations of like some interactions, but there's not like, here's chapter one where blah, blah, blah happened. And this character said this and that character said that. And, you know, there's a lot of room for embellishment and filling in the cracks that I feel like probably gave the show a lot more freedom than, say, Game of Thrones, where it's like you are working from an actual book and you can compare like one to one, like, oh, in season one, it's very accurate. Season five, it's not. You know, but I think it's both a weakness and a strength of this new series. I don't know how you feel about that.
I say it as if I care about that aspect. I am actually a big fan of the idea of adaptation.
I like that too.
They're able to kind of go in and play with it to sort of varying degrees. But there is a definite level of like they are trying to stay true to the series that introduced many people to the franchise.
Yes.
You know, the television program that, you know, that came before it.
Yes.
And, I mean, it even goes, like, you know, to certain details as much as, like, the opening credit do.
Oh, yeah. So, and I think, okay, so we're gonna talk full spoilers about this show. If you haven't watched House of the Dragon, this is your chance to step away, go watch it, and come back. But yeah, we're going to talk full spoilers because there's a lot to talk about. Yes, the opening credits, so the first episode, they didn't do any opening credits song. The main titles, as the name of that piece goes. But which I thought was going to be like, okay, a lot of pilots usually forego an opening song because they want to just focus on like the story and setting everything up. But I was surprised starting from the second episode, yeah, they did go back to the old and gold, the tried and true, Ramin Djawadi classic, which I have, no complaints about. It's a wonderful song.
In a sense, I was like kind of relieved at like hearing. I was like, oh, thank God. They could either just go with what they know or like do something that could possibly potentially suck. And like,
here's the thing though. Much like, many composers, Ramin Djawadi is an excellent composer. Some of the music from the original Game of Thrones and other works he's done has always been great. So I'm sure if he wanted to do a House of the Dragons original, he could have, and it would have slapped. But that's fine. I think using the original song, it lets people know, hey, we know what you're here for,
right,
and we're going to give you what you want.
I would be surprised if the next banger topped it. I feel like maybe at first everybody would have been like, yeah, it's okay, it's not as good. And then after a while, they're like, oh, no, this is a bop, you know, like, yeah. because think about it, when watching Breaking Bad, do you like the introduction, like, or do you like the like guitar riff from Better Call Saul better?
Oh, God. I think the Better Call Saul one a little bit better.
Come on. You know you do. And I'm like, there's something, there's just like something to it that it's just really, you know, chef's yes, kiss.
Indeed. And, you know, comparing it to like so many other shows with great opening themes and stuff, I really feel like this should be like an awards category, is like opening credits.
Ah! Honestly, that would be, I mean, like an interesting category.
Because, like, I mean, like, some of them, like, they don't even really try. Sometimes it's just like, here's a, you know, song and some, like, vaguely put together visuals. But I feel like with certain shows, like House of the Dragon, for example, there's a lot of visual storytelling going on. Like, the big thing they focus on with this one, in Game of Thrones, it was like, we're going to show you the world, and we're going to show you the different locations, and the kind of the seats of power, and who's each house and stuff, and it lets you know about this world. This one, it's all about the family tree. It's the Targaryen. It starts with Aegon and his sisters, Visenya and Rhaenys? Yeah, Rhaenys and Visenya. And then it like splits off, and each thing that the blood passes through is like representative of a different character in the series, and I think that's really cool. I'm just saying, I want an award ceremony all about opening title sequences. I think that'd be great.
I'll tell you what, I'm looking it up right now. So as you're familiar with the Academy Awards of Film and Television, of Film and Television Sciences, mm-hmm. or specifically the Oscars, they have a Best Music category and like a Best Original Song category, right?
Mm-hmm.
Emmys just have like a Best Music and Lyric category, and so my thought is like, sometimes if you look into here, like they have some of these songs that are like very specific, as you know, same thing like a director would be nominated for a very specific episode. Mm-hmm. At least in the Television Academy. And mm-hmm. so it just seems more often that the songs that are nominated are not themes, but are songs, that do have lyric, which is kind of like, I don't know.
All I'm saying is, like, sometimes a show comes along, and it doesn't even have to be, like, a composed orchestral song. Sometimes, like, to this day, the song during the opening titles of the first season of True Detective, that's a good one. And speaking of True Detective, HBO posted today they've started scripting, I think, for the next season of True Detective to be set in Alaska.
I did see that. You know, it's funny, I saw something about that and then something about Fargo.
Ooh.
Did you see
that? Again, great. Just too many good shows. I love good shows. Let's get some quick stuff out of the way so we can really dig deep into this House of the Dragons. Do you have a synopsis to give our lovely listeners, even though we've already told them that it's not, we're going into full spoilers and they should know what we're talking about?
It's an overview. Here's what we got. Based on the material from George R. R. Martin's book, Fire mm-hmm. and Blood, House of mm-hmm. the Dragon tells the story of the Dance of Dragons and the events mm-hmm. leading up to the brutal civil war. King Viserys the First, Targaryen, right? Am I reading that correctly?
Yeah.
Rules over an unprecedented time of peace, but questions mm-hmm. about his succession threaten to send the realm into chaos. So very much an overarching...
I think that's fair.
That's not what the show's about, you know?
Yeah, and, I think it's just enough for you to go off of and kind of know what you're getting into. Let's talk about just who worked on the show, and then we'll dig in. Obviously, this is on HBO, created by Ryan Condal and Miguel Sapochnik. Miguel Sapochnik was a big director for the original series. He did a lot of the big battle episodes. I believe he did the Battle of the Bastards. He did, I want to say he did Hard Home, and he even did The Long Night. So he's like, you know, he's a big time dude when it comes to Game of Thrones, all his past. So
he's his time.
He did The Winds of Winter, which is was that the second to last, the final episode of like the sixth or seventh season.
I think it was in the sixth season.
Battle of the Bastards, Hard Home. He did The Gift. He did The Long Night, The Bells.
Yeah, I like that episode a lot. I think that's probably one of the best episodes of the final season. The Bells.
Oh yeah, yeah. Love a good city barbecue. We've got obviously is based on Fire and Blood by George R. R. Martin. Directed by Miguel Sapochnik, Greg Yaitonis, Claire Kilmer, and Geeta Vasant Patel. Written by Ryan Condal, Gabe Fonseca, Ira Parker, Charmaine DeGrate, I don't know how to pronounce that, Sarah Hess, Kevin Lau, and Eileen Shim. Cinematography by Fabian Wagner, Pepe Avila de Pino, Alejandro Martinez, and Catherine Goldschmidt. Composition by Ramin Djawadi, like we said, the maestro. Its original run was August 21st to October 23rd, and we got this outstanding cast. So we have both Millie Alcock and Emma D'Arcy as kind of our lead, our central character in this Rhaenyra Targaryen.
They are our Negroni Spagliatos with a bit of Prosecco in it.
What did you just...
This is the TikTok, the meme. Have you not seen this?
No.
You have to have seen this. There's an audio snippet from an interview that Emma D'Arcy did with Olivia Cooke, mm-hmm. plays Alison Hightower, which we're going to get to in a second.
Yeah.
And they're reading each other questions, and then it's like, mm-hmm. oh, what's your drink of choice? And Emma D'Arcy's like, a Negroni Spagliato with Prosecco in it. And it's like cascaded into this whole thing. Zach, you really haven't seen this?
I have not. No, I'll have to look it up as soon as we're done recording.
I'm going to send it to you while we're recording. So
okay. Yes, we've got Paddy Considine, however you pronounce his last name.
One of the greatest actors on the planet right now.
One of the best actors working today as Viserys, first of his name, Targaryen. Obviously, we love him from all of the Blood and Ice Cream movies, The Three Flavors Cornetto by Edgar Wright. He was in The Outsider from HBO.
That was a very good limited short series.
So great actor, and his work in this has just it was stellar. It was so fantastic. Matt Smith as Daemon Targaryen. Let me tell you, Matt Smith was one of those people that when he was cast, I was like, really, Matt Smith? We're gonna bring this guy into it.
I'm no Doctor Who fan, but like, I like this guy.
No, but he blew every expectation I had for him out of the water.
Did you ever watch The Crown?
No.
Oh, dude. He kills it in those first two seasons.
That's what I've heard good things. Yeah. Emily Carey and Olivia Cooke, as you just said, as Alicent Hightower. Risa Fons as Otto Hightower. Risa Fons, tremendous actor, and just absolutely killed it in this season.
The lizard himself.
among other things, but yes, he was the lizard. Yeah. Steve Toussaint as Corlys Velaryon. Eve Best as Rhaenys Targaryen, the queen that never was. John McMillan as Laenor Velaryon. Fabian Frankel as Sir Criston Cole, who I love that the internet just collectively was like, hey, fuck this guy in particular.
Oh.
Matthew Needham as Laerys Strong. I want to talk about him a little later because he's freaky. Harry Collette as Jacaerys Velaryon, Jace as he's also known. Tom Glen Carney as Aegon, the second of his name, Targaryen. And Ewan Mitchell as Aemon Targaryen, Aemon One-Eye, who did a little oopsie
Oopsie daisy.
A little oopsie at the end of this season, and we'll talk about that as we get to it.
Also, he's got a fucking funny face. He's like,
yeah, he's got you know who he kind of reminded me of?
Voldemort.
Oh, hold on, sorry, I just got a very important email. No, it's okay. I'll look at it later. It's about a car I'm getting, so I gotta be ready. So he, you know, he reminded me of Mac Tonight or whatever the McDonald's mascot.
You mean Ronald McDonald?
No, Mac Tonight. Do me a favor, just Google Mac M-A-C Tonight.
The moon?
Yes, because he's got that massive chin.
Oh, I mean, yeah.
I know. Guess. Does that mean? I feel like that's mean.
I mean, they're actors. They're used to this kind of stuff.
Anyway, let's talk House of the Dragon, shall we? I wanted to start by talking. I feel like before we get into it, some of the challenges I feel like this story faced going into its first season, and kind of how it sort of addressed some of the aspects of it that I think would be kind of challenging. So obviously setting itself apart from the original series, because I feel like you don't want to come in and be like, it's the same thing that we did before, just with a reskin. Which I feel like that was a very early criticism that I think is unfounded, but an early criticism of the season that they're like, it's just Game of Thrones again.
But and honestly, I don't even know if I would even consider that a criticism.
Well, yeah, no, I was about to say, yeah. What were you coming in to expect?
Yeah.
you sat down to watch a show set in the Game of Thrones universe. What were you thinking it was gonna be?
I thought that they thought this was going to be a puppet show.
Yeah, really. The other thing I think had going a big challenge it faced was the timeline, because this is not a Game of Thrones story where events start and then everything that goes forward is happening basically one event right after the other in a very tumultuous time period. This is a generational story.
Yeah, I like the fact that they got to kind of take their times with certain highlights in between the decades. I mean, yes. It also shows when we found out that there were going to be younger and older versions of the cast members, which I didn't necessarily realize at first, even though all the news was there and present for everybody to kind of see. But it gives you like a lot more groundwork when it comes to like, oh, we get to explain why you get to see the coming of age of some of these characters and why the relationships progressed the way they did. And to be honest, it's kind of nice that we don't have to stick with like every fucking day of like what's going on, that we can kind of just fill in the gaps of what happened in like, I don't know, the 7-year, 10-year period at times that we wouldn't see some of these characters.
Yeah.
For example, with a young Aemon who got like a big strong man and then decided that he wanted to, you know, prove himself beyond that of like, let's say his brother or his cousins.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think the timeline, and again, we'll get into a lot of it, but I think even though that was a challenge for the series of that the big timeline, they kind of use it to the best way possible, where they use that longer form story to shape some really good character dynamics.
Yeah.
And the last thing, I remember being pretty worried about this going into it before, because, I mean, I've read Fire and Blood, and just knowing it from, like, reading the Game of Thrones books, the Song of Ice and Fire books, that, like, knowing this family, having a cast where it's, like, the characters are, like, Viserys and Rhaenyra and Rhaenys and Jaehaerys and Lucerys and Jaehaerys and Daemon and Aemond and Aegon and Aegon and I was like, this is, are they going to be able to differentiate these characters so easily? And I think for the most part, I think they did. I know, like, my folks watch the show and they are not as deeply entwined with the source material as, like, myself or as other people. So they're like, okay, so that's Aegon, and who's this now? And I'll be like, that's Aemond. And they'll be like, okay, Aemond, and he's the brother, or he is the who? And they'll be like, okay, and that's Jaehaerys, that's Jace, and that's Lucerys, and that's Luke.
Yeah.
And that's that baby is Viserys. And they're like, oh, but I thought Viserys was the dad. And it's like, yes.
They just all named them after each other.
It doesn't help. And it's actually, I think, again, they turn a challenge into a literal plot element where, because there are so many fucking people named Aegon in this family, it leads to maybe the greatest miscommunication in the history of television.
Listen, you're not wrong, especially when we start talking about prophecies foretold and things
exactly.
Of the like.
Exactly.
But you know what's interesting? Let's talk about some of these challenges that you brought up, because I find that starting from that first one had to differentiate itself from Game of Thrones. I can't help but think that in that very first episode where we get our first dragon taking flight
the very first shot of
the Red Keep, yeah, that it's just like everybody felt like they were home again.
Well, yes. So I wanted to talk about that because where I think the show had a lot of challenges, and challenges is not negative. I just meant, like, it had a lot that it had to do to be successful.
There was a lot on its shoulders.
And I would say it was about, like, 98% successful with all of its, with everything it needed to do. But let's talk about some of the advantages. First and foremost being fully grown dragons from the word go.
Yeah.
This isn't... You get baby dragon chicks.
Daenerys Targaryen's dragons. These are like Vhagar, Rhaegar, Shaegar, Maegar.
Well, you got Syrax, you got Caraxes, you got Maelys, you got Vermax, you got Arax, you got Vhagar, you got Dreamfire, you got Sea Smoke, you've got Vermithor. There is mention of Balerion the Black Dread, but we don't see him because he's dead. And there's going to be more. There's going to be more.
They are still cultivating dragons.
There's going to be Grey Ghost and Cannibal and... God, I can't wait for the future seasons. It's going to be crazy. But yes, so not having to wait. And like, it's kind of crazy that HBO is like, oh yeah, you know that series that by the end of it we were doing like $15 million episodes like every season, that's our starting point with this season.
I would say it's pretty nice to kind of just be there from the get.
And can I just say, the budget for this show, I feel like so much budget went into the costumes, because
for sure,
holy shit.
But also, like, it kind of makes you think, like, you can kind of tell where some areas were, like, would be green screen versus, like, where some of the sets were built, like in some of the art direction.
But, for sure. The whole bridge, the walkway going up to Dragonstone, that was a green screen.
But then I also like how they adapted some of the areas to make differentiate them from, like, sets that we had seen in the original series.
Mm-hmm.
And also, same thing with some of, like, the dialogue and stuff, but I'll talk about that later, but I felt as if there were still some areas about King's Landing that we were still just discovering. Same thing with Dragonstone. Same thing with, I mean, just the idea that we're introduced to this new area, Driftmark. And then these areas like the Stepstones. And on all these kind of other locales, it's just nice to not be tied down to, let's say, I don't know, Winterfell and the Wall and other things.
Now, I'll be glad in season 2 when they get to Winterfell and it'd be like, it's like a homecoming. But I will say, it's testament to
the set for Winterfell. You hear about this? Like 2 years ago. Yeah.
That's a shame.
The original set.
Oh, now they got to build it again. But I got to say, it's a testament to the show that after 8 seasons of Game of Thrones, I'm not bored seeing King's Landing. I'm like, this is, you know, I'm glad to be back.
Enough time had elapsed that I was like, oh, dude, this is nice.
Dubrovnik never looked better.
Yeah.
So, speaking of which, another real good advantage I think this show had was it didn't need hardly any time to set things up for the world. You go into this, I doubt anyone went into this show blind. You know, I feel like everyone went into the show having seen Game of Thrones or having seen at least some Game of Thrones. So you know how this world works. It's nobody's got magic, there's dragons going around, and the seasons are long, and the politics are tricky. And that's really all you gotta know about the series. And I think it goes in, and it knows that you know how this world works, so it doesn't have to set things up, it doesn't have to explain things, it's just you get to just kind of jump into it, and just jump back into the backstabbery and the family drama that that I think made the original show such a big hit. So it doesn't have to do a lot of the legwork that the original series had. I always said that the first season of Game of Thrones has a pretty big barrier to entry, which I would put it at about 3 to 5 episodes before people go like.
I think I did have to rewatch the first like episode of Game of Thrones at least like 6 times before I started watching the show.
Yeah, and it's just, I think it's just one of those shows where it does drop you in the deep end. It's like swim or die. And this show trusts that you've been shown all this stuff before. So once you get into it, like we're getting like small council meetings right away. We're getting political backstabbing and all this stuff and dragons and all these crazy things, but we don't have to wait for it. We know how it works, and in many ways I think it does get the leg up on the original series in that regard.
Well, what I also like about it too is that, you know, because so many people complained about how the last season ended, in the sense that it almost feels like a return to form for the series.
In many ways, yes.
And so because of that, I think a lot of people were just happy to welcome it with more open arms than like what we saw last time, which is funny, you know, because then there is the one critique that, you know, has been passed around like, oh, they're rushing through some of these things. Like, no, they're not. They have their pacing. I think there was an overwhelming welcoming of that pace just because we wanted those more intimate scenes between these characters that would then lead up with just as much like ferocity as like any big battle scene would.
Yeah, I think all in all, I even put here, you know, skipping because they're skipping ahead years at a time, sometimes I think at one point a decade at a time. Mm-hmm. Some episodes it's like there's a year gap, sometimes it's 3 years, and then it's like 10 years, and then it's 6 years. And because they do that, they're not there's no point when it's like, oh, we had to do an episode during this like really slow period during the thing. It's like, no, we'll just skip to the exciting stuff. So even on its slowest episode, there's still a lot of interesting stuff going on. If it's a battle or it's character drama or, you know, shadowy backstabbery and stuff. That again, I think the show, the original series, had a lot where it was like, okay, it's okay if you're not really into this current storyline. It's building up to a big moment in a season or two. Whereas this show was like, okay, this 10 years, nothing happens. We're moving on. I will say there is a few consequences of its breakneck pace. Certain characters, I feel like, show up and die in the same episode, and I personally, even though I understand for the sake of the structure of the season why they were killed off as quickly as they were, I feel like there's a few characters where I'm like, we didn't really know who this person was, so I don't feel anything when they die.
I don't know that you were meant to really feel something when they die, though, because if their character really didn't serve any purpose in the greater story, what the fuck doesn't matter?
No, I agree. I just think it's like, you know, I think of like Harwin Strong and Lena Valerian. For as much as Lena's death affects her brother in the following episode, when they go to Driftmark for her funeral, and as much as it like really fuels a lot of the discontent between the Valerians and the Targaryens, we really don't know her. We get that one really awkward scene where she walks with Viserys in the gardens, and like when he's like courting her when she's 12 years old, which a wonderfully unpleasant scene. Kudos to them, because they knew how fucking weird this was and they just capitalized on it. But like there's that scene, then there's her when she's with married to Daemon and they're at Pentos, and then she dies. And I'm just like, okay, well, I mean, I guess it was nice to know her for the couple of scenes she's in.
I don't know, but felt like her exit was fucking badass.
But I feel like in like three seasons, when this series wraps up, because I think they're going to go for like a 4-season run on this, I think in 3 seasons, so I'll be like, hey, yeah, remember Daemon's first wife or his second wife? And people will be like, I'm sorry, who? And
I'll be like, yeah. I'll
be like,
yeah,
the people he was married to before Rhaenyra. And they'll be like, no, he wasn't. And I'll be like, yeah, go back and look. They were there for one episode.
I'll tell you what is that Daemon's first wife is probably the one that left the biggest like impact on me as a viewer. Just because we got to see we actually got something from her, like a small performance that wasn't based on like other people necessarily talking about her.
Like, oh, you mean just where she like was like, fuck you, you ain't hot shit, and then
basically, but then also like she was like this badass like I mean basically a knight, even though she wasn't like a knight.
Yeah, she was like a warrior lady.
I'm like, it was awesome. It was kind of sad to see her passing. It was kind of cool thing that either you had mentioned or maybe it was one in the little post show snippets of what the creators wanted to do. That they were working with like that gray area that wasn't necessarily put in the books, that like, oh, Daemon, yes, wasn't written in that Daemon killed her, but like,
right, yeah. So that's one of the coolest parts about this show, is because the book is told from the perspective of like, this is a historical record, and we have like these three people who are providing like the context, and one's like a court jester, one's a maester, and one's like some lord, and this is their personal account of it, and you know, this is what they say, and there is, like you said, a lot of gray area. So yeah, for Daemon's first wife, she is said to have died, you know, horseback riding.
Yeah.
And that's all we know. There's a lot of that stuff throughout the book where you go like, you know, this character, the people had the families had a feast, and then one of Aemon mentioned, gave a toast to his three strong nephews, and you go like, okay, that's all we have to work with, but it makes such a great scene when they're all having dinner, and Aemon's like, a toast to you, three strong boys, and I'm just like, ooh, the drama.
Yeah.
Just wonderful stuff. But yeah, I think despite every, you know, challenge this show had, I think it really rose to the occasion. Let's talk characters, let's talk dynamics. I think the one who stole the show, the one who I know by the end of their run in the series, everyone was like begging for this man to be nominated for an Emmy, Paddy Considine or Considine, as Viserys.
He was like, by and large, I at one point I felt like after the first two episodes, like, this is his show, number one.
It's so funny because a lot of people compare him to Robert Baratheon in the first season, but he is much more
Eddard Stark.
He's a much more involved character than Bobby B.
Yeah. Also, Robert Baratheon's an asshole. I would not say Viserys.
No,
whatever the fuck his subtitle was.
At the end of the first episode, you might be like, well, guy's kind of a dick. You know, he pushed his wife to keep trying to give him sons until it literally killed her.
That sucked. That did suck.
The show just starts peeling back layers, and you're like, oh, he's conflicted, and he really did care about her, and oh, he's got his nice little Lego city, and
he's got his Legos, dude.
Dude, and just like, but then also I love just like watching, like, he gets cut, and then the next episode he's got an infection, and the next episode he's missing some fingers, and the next episode he's like can barely hold himself together, he's losing an arm, and then by the end he is like this shell of a man.
Yeah. I think that was kind of cool though, how they like added those different like pieces of his character, like especially that they were so visceral and like they were visually affecting him, not just, we could tell where all of his emotional turmoil and everything had affected, you know, his character compass, if you will. But now we could also see like the physical toll that being king had made him. Because it was also the first time we'd ever seen a king over the course of what, like a 20-year period?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, because everyone in Game of Thrones, I mean, like Robert Baratheon was king for like 17 years, but we only know him in the last few months of his life.
Yeah. See Joffrey king for maybe a year.
Yeah, more or less. Tommen for about 20 minutes. But by the way, this is a warning to anyone who doesn't want spoilers for what happens in the future seasons of House of the Dragon, but be wary going back and watching original Game of Thrones, because there are some scenes where they're just like, oh, blah, 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 Rhaenyra Targaryen, blah, 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 Aemond, blah, blah, blah. And they're just, like, giving out, like, plot details, obviously because they didn't know they were going to make a spinoff at the time.
No, but that's kind of cool.
It is cool. But, I mean, if you care about spoilers, tread lightly. But,
I mean, they'll always adapt.
Going back to Viserys, though, it's just, I love that they found the humanity at the center of this figure, because like it's one thing, you know, like you see these people and they're like, oh, it's a king and you gotta do a king's duty, and it doesn't matter if it's an awkward situation, you need to marry this person, you need to do this thing, and he's being pressured by pretty much all sides, from his hand or his small council, or every lord who is greedy for their own rise in power. And, you know, it became a thing where I always liked to see how he was going to react to things. Cause like, they'd be like, hey, we need you to remarry. Your wife is dead. So, you know, as the king, you need to remarry. And we have just the person for you. It's the 12-year-old. And he's like, I'm sorry, what?
Yeah. That I was not a fan of.
And then in the episode where they go on the hunt for the White Hart, and he's just getting, like, day drunk, because it's like, what else can he do? And he doesn't feel like a king, he doesn't feel like a man, and, you know, when Otto Hightower comes up and he's like, hey, I have a great idea to just solve all your problems, what if you married your daughter to your 2-year-old son? And he just starts cracking up. And I'm just like, I'm with you, Viserys. Like, fuck all of this. and I love, because then he's like, are you fucking kidding me? And Otto Hightower's like, you know what? You're right. Bad timing. I'm just gonna walk over here, not talk about it. And then just that scene of him having to kill the, like, not White Hart, the regular stag.
Yeah.
That they caught. And it's just like, they're tying the stag down, and they're like, here, stab it right here. And then when he kills it, everyone's like, oh, good job. And I'm like, do you feel like a man? You shouldn't feel like a man. Teddy Roosevelt wouldn't do that.
No, it didn't feel very, I don't want to say kingly, but there it took a lot of like the gravitas out of that. But it made it for a nice juxtaposition when we got to see what was his? It was Sir Criston, and it was
Rhaenyra
out in the wild, and they kind of found the better stag, right?
Yeah, but I mean, just like the everything with Viserys, I just felt it was just like so well orchestrated. I think I even saw George R.R. Martin called up Paddy Considine after his last episode, and was just like, "Your Viserys is better than the one I wrote." Like you fucking killed it, and
it killed it.
And that final episode with him, where he is like fucking Phantom of the Opera.
Oh, yeah, dude, his breath taken away in the very last moment, which is kind of sad that we ended up getting the same scene in Rings of Power. But like, it was definitely 20 billion times more meaningful in House of the Dragon.
In House of the Dragon, because, I mean, no fault of Rings of Power. We were never meant to really know Tar Palantir.
I know. I just thought it was a funny kind of like, oh, shit.
It was a weird coincidence, for sure. But, my God, by the just that final, you know, the walk to the throne. Are you fucking kidding me? What a fucking power move. You know, he's like, I will sit the throne today. And you're like, yes, sir.
Dude, it's
and that scene of him at the table when he takes the mask off and he's like, I want you to see me for what I am, and I want you all to stop fucking being assholes to each other.
It was nice.
Yeah, it just
couldn't fucking last.
No, of course not.
It couldn't last more than one evening.
Unfortunately not. But yeah, just Viserys, wonderful. Wonderful character. So glad we had him for the season. And then there's Daemon, the wild card.
Daemon really is the wild card. He's Green Man.
That's a good reference. So I love he's never in a state of just like, I am this guy and I'm stable and you can trust that I will do this thing. It's like, when we first meet Daemon, he's just like, I'll fucking cut a dude's dick off as a gold cloak. I don't care.
I identify with that.
The cutting the dick off part?
No, it's just Daemon. He's probably the television's best bad boy right now.
Oh, people, and like, I think a lot of people were like, I do not get why you like him so much.
Honestly, he is the epitome of, like, disrespect your surroundings, bro.
He's like, if Tyrion Lannister was not a dwarf and had, like, you know, the sword skills to back up all of his shit talk.
Is he as intelligent as? I feel like Tyrion Lannister definitely it's more intelligence.
He's not the most intelligent person in the room, but... but then, like, you know, listen, you see him and he's like, you know, I'm kind of self-serving and I just, you know, I'll do whatever I want. I will be a badass and a bad boy and stuff. But then you're like, he's so vulnerable. He's like, all he wants is his brother's approval and for like people to just like think highly of him. And he's willing to almost like kill himself in the battle of the war in the Stepstones for it.
Against what was the name of this guy?
Kragas Strahar, the crab feeder.
The crab feeder? That was very much like a faux, like a faux villain that we almost had, like a villain of the week kind of thing.
He did nothing, and then he was just like, I'm gonna hide in this cave, and Daemon was like, bet.
But you know what I like about Daemon's character, though? There's still, like, he then gets to surprise the audience with, like, his deep knowledge of, like, the Targaryen tradition. He seems to be the only one that really knows a damn thing about, like, dragon breeding and, like, trying to, like, you know, preserve, like, that way of life.
For sure.
And so, like, I think that's just a very interesting kind of character piece that we didn't get to see from anyone else in the entire family.
Yeah, no, for sure. He carries on a lot of that, like, you know, he harvests the eggs, he incubates them, he has, I think, a lot more of a connection with the Dragon Keepers.
Yeah.
Which, yeah, it was all very cool. And, honestly, the scene that caught me off guard, which I think it caught a lot of people off guard, it's, like, one of the most, like, celebrated scenes in the season, but when Viserys is going up to his throne and his crown falls off and he's like, or he's telling the Kingsguard, like, I'll do it myself, I'm fine. And then, like, his crown falls off and someone picks it up and he's like, I said I'm fine. And he turns around and it's Daemon. I know, I was just like, oh, I was not expecting to feel this intense of emotions in House of the Dragon today. And it really, I think it really hit its mark hard. Pretty crazy that it was an improvised scene, apparently.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, they said that it was the whole thing in the episode was that Viserys would go up to the throne, and then later during the dinner, Daemon would like give like a heartfelt toast. But during the filming, the crown fell off, and Matt Smith, as Daemon, you know, went up and put the, you know, helped him to the throne and put the crown back on his head, and everyone was like, yeah, we're keeping that, and we're just gonna cut the toast out from the thing, because it's like it does all the things that the toast that they wanted to do with the toast, but without any words. And it's such a powerful thing, because I mean, like, at the end of the day, this is like, you know,
there is still like a very much level of respect that he has for him,
and you know it's like Viserys is at like his like physically lowest point. He's like, he's withered and diminished and all that. And it's like, but at the end of the day, that's still, for Daemon, that's still his brother.
Yeah.
Even after all the shit they've been through, like that still means something. And I'm just like, wow, I was not expecting them to go this fucking hard with the series. And I'm so glad they did.
Daemon's character reminds me a lot of our favorite Lannister boy, our second favorite Lannister boy,
Jaime
Lannister, in a sense.
In a sense, but then he does the Daemon thing, where he goes, man, you know what? Like, maybe Daemon's not such an absolute piece of shit, and that we thought he was. And then the final episode, he's like, fucking choking out Rhaenyra and trying like. Basically trying to throw his weight around Dragonstone as the news starts coming in of what the Greens were doing by crowning Aegon. And there's a few points when people are like, hey, Rhaenyra said this, and he's like, how much can I push against this and not get in trouble?
I'm just saying, I mean, we've seen Jaime do some stupid ass shit too.
Oh, for sure, absolutely. It's a good comparison. I just feel like at the end of the day, I'm like, Jaime was an absolutely good person who did terrible stuff because of kind of like the environment he was in.
I do not agree. I think Jaime was not an absolutely good person, not just because of the environment.
I think if separated from the Lannisters, who enabled his worst behaviors, Jaime is an entirely respectable person.
I think he learned to get better.
Yes, because he got separated from his family.
Nah. It's
all the shitty stuff he does is when he is in proximity.
We could say the same thing about Aemon. Or Aemon. Fucking Daemon. Aemon. I just did it a second time around. Daemon separated from his family could have been a fine person.
No, because he does get separated from his family for the episode, and he's still kind of just a...
It's because he grew up with privilege, Zachary.
Yeah, listen, I will just say
white
this.
White hair, I think, privilege.
Really. I like Daemon, and knowing what happens to his character going forward, I'm very excited to see, because he does some batshit crazy stuff during the dance. So I'm very excited to see that. Let's talk, though, about the centerpiece of this whole series, this whole season, the friendship, doomed or otherwise, between Rhaenyra and Alicent.
Oh, the babies.
Because this is one of those, like, we used to be best friends, and now one of your son's cars ate my son and his car.
I just love that we kind of get, like, this amazing kind of like betrayal Judas scene at one point, like where Alicent takes out the knife and like tries to get at Rhaenyra. Like, that was probably one of the best scenes in the entirety of the series. Like, to go from, we went from them being best friends as little girls, you know, both dealing with their own shit and being there for each other, to like literally at each other's throats Mm-hmm. And then to her being like, oh, finally we'll get to see your true colors, like, dude. Oh.
Yeah, it's great. And I will just say this, both of them are softened up considerably from the book. The book, they're both, like, in the book, George Martin is, like, everyone's an asshole. There is not a redeeming quality among any of the characters in the books. So they definitely made a lot of the characters a lot more likable in the show, which I'm fine with because you have to relate to somebody. I'll say this. Despite the fact that Alicent is the first one to draw a knife on the other, in so many ways, she is in many ways, a victim of the patriarchy. And she really doesn't do anything wrong for all the hate she gets until she starts really asserting herself. And she only is, like, in the wrong at the end because circumstances have worked themselves to make it that she's in the wrong because she is a very rigidly minded person. But, you know, when she's growing up, all she's doing is doing her duty and being a good daughter and a good queen and whatever. And Rhaenyra, I like Rhaenyra, but she was kind of a wild child and she was kind of like a fuck you all, do what I want. My dad's the king, and I can do whatever I want, and I can sleep around and stuff, and then lied and gaslit everyone to be like, no, that never happened. And so I totally get why Alicent would be like, oh, you're a fucking horrible person. That being said.
But two wrongs don't make a right.
No, of course not. I just feel like it's so easy to be like, I think, well, let me ask you, are you a green or are you a black?
I'm a black.
Okay, yeah. Most people are blacks, and that's because, not necessarily because Allison did anything wrong. It's what?
Billy may have to cut this up.
No.
I want that snippet.
Context.
I want that snippet of you just saying, most people are blacks.
There you go. But, but no, it's okay. I think I don't even know what I'm saying anymore. The I think both of them are in many ways wrong and right about a lot of things, but also, like, Alicent in the episode titled "The Greens," where Viserys has died and the Greens are moving fast to crown Aegon.
I thought it was called the Green Council.
Is it called the Green Council? Whatever.
I think it is called the Green Council.
But the fact that, like, they're like, all right, Viserys is dead. Let's get our plans going. And Allison just like, whoa.
You guys have been doing this the whole time?
And they're like, hey, just don't worry about it. Just we got this. And I think,
like, while it works in her favor, she did realize that, like, you know.
I feel like even at the end, she was still trying her best to, like, get the best outcome of a shitty situation. And unfortunately for her, everyone around her is a fucking lunatic.
Or a narcissist.
Her bodyguard is just psychotic. Her sons are all inbred, you know, crazy. One's a drunk, one's a fortune teller, you know, green seer, Helena.
Oh, yeah.
There's a beast beneath the boards, man.
That's true.
And then
there's Aemond. We don't get much screen time with her, I realize. Like, we saw her for all of maybe four scenes.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm like, I realize, like, why I feel like every time I saw her, I'm like, I know so little about this person.
Aemond, just being everyone's favorite, scary uncle.
He is for sure forced to be reckoned with, or
listen,
to not
I
be reckoned with.
But again, it's great how they're able to use that the generational story and the time skipping to kind of tell his story, and like he goes from kind of the kid that everyone picks on to like the kid that no one wants to fuck with. Yeah, and so I don't blame Alicent for, at least in the show, for how a lot of this stuff goes. You know who I blame for a lot of the shit?
Who?
Rhaenyra. Otto Hightower.
Otto Hightower.
Rhaenyra didn't help a lot of the situations, but at the end of the day, again, I think she was said, hey, her dad was like, you're the heir, and then everyone was like, oh, absolutely not, and so she's just been trying to protect her own. Let's talk Otto Hightower, though.
First off, I hate this note that you have in here that you say.
Please read it aloud.
He's the Kirkland brand Tywin Lannister. Fuck
Tywin
you.
Lannister, I'm sorry, Tywin Lannister would fold this man like a beach chair.
Well, the thing is, Tywin Lannister also has, like, army and so much fucking money in the world that it didn't even matter.
All I'm saying is, like, I think we are supposed to compare these characters because they are very much, like, they're the patriarch of a powerful house, they're the hand of the king, they're, like, kind of, like, they're no-nonsense people. But Otto Hightower, I like him. I thought Risa Fons did a wonderful job.
He did do an amazing job.
When he's having to kind of like match wits with Daemon or with Rhaenyra or any of them, you can tell like he's a snake. But man, I just wanted to punch him in the face so many times. And I was just like, get this man in a room with Tywin Lannister and like, he'll end up killing himself.
I hate that. I don't think
Tywin Lannister would be like, play him the song.
I think while Tywin Lannister could probably hold his own in a sword fight, I don't think Otto Hightower.
Oh, I don't mean like a sword fight. I just mean like in a game of like wits.
I'm just saying. I think Otto Hightower is just as evenly witty, and okay, we have more to see from him.
Yes. Better comparison. Let me ask you: who wins in a battle of wits, Otto Hightower, or Olenna Tyrell, the Queen of Thorns?
Otto Hightower.
Diana Rigg.
Otto Hightower.
Otto Hightower over Olenna Tyrell.
Olenna Tyrell got the one up because she poisoned a kid and nobody knew for seasons.
But no, she was in a game, in a battle of wits?
Yeah.
Come on.
Game of Shadowed that shit. She got her daughter to be queen or whatever the fuck.
No one beats the Queen of Thorns. I'm sorry. But let me tell you, Otto Hightower, worst father of the year.
Yeah, he did marry off his daughter to a man that was like four times her age.
Just the whole time when she's like, you might want to wear your mom's dress when you go see the king. And I'm like, ew, dude. Like,
yeah, that was a little rough.
And I get it. He's just protecting his own and he's just trying to supplant his daughter as the queen, and he succeeds, but it's like, is it worth it?
I just can't believe there was that one scene where they talk as his means for dismissal from like the Red Keep. That
you mean when Viserys fires him?
Exactly, but like it was because it was brought up to him, like, dude, like you don't even realize, like he offered his daughter to you so that he could supplant his grandchild as like the future king or queen or whatever the hell,
or basically have a Hightower as the king.
Exactly. And so like the fact that Viserys didn't see this, you know, and maybe Viserys is just, you know, a very easily fooled guy, he might not be as clever. You gotta hand it to Hightower's cunning and his strategery and his also assholiness.
Yes, yeah, he is a true player of the game, through and through.
I was gonna say this season, this show, like, is by far like definitive, like the Game of Thrones,
yes,
quote unquote. You know, there was a lot of that going around. It was very important to much more important to these characters, I feel like, than to the characters in the series prior.
Yeah, there's a few more characters, a few like smaller characters. I wanna talk about Kristen Cole, who I think starts off as like, you know, you're like, okay, this guy's not too bad. He's like, he's like from a lower house, a lesser house in Dorne. He's you know, kind of he's the princess's protector, and he's yada yada yada, and then he caught feelings for the princess.
Let me tell you something. You said this earlier about somebody else, and I don't agree with your statement that you have written here about him being just the worst, because I also feel like he is a character of circumstance.
He is absolutely a character of circumstance, that he was basically ruined by Rhaenyra.
Because his principles still stand true from the beginning to the end of the episode. Like, he is a man of his word, his honor is very important to him, and all these things.
And he will beat a motherfucker to death. It doesn't matter if you're in the middle of a wedding feast. He will cave your fucking skull in.
And that's what I'm saying. Like, he... I don't know that he's the worst. I think he's done terrible things, but not they're not his
it's
fault.
It's like he started off in a really good place.
He's like Will Hunting. It's not his fault.
He had one really bad interaction with Rhaenyra where they fucked and then he caught feelings and she was like, kind of can't. And then he was like, oh, I'm basically a whore. And I think from that point on, it was just a catastrophic just drop for him. He was like, I'm really insecure about this, and then this guy is like kind of like jabbing me about it, some guy I don't know. Now I've beaten him to death in front of everybody. Now I'm about to kill myself, and Alicent comes over and saves him. And then from then on, he's really just super aggressive and angry all the time.
Listen,
and
there's a lot of pent-up rage.
He kills Lord Beesbury in the middle of the small council meeting, and everyone's like, are you fucking kidding?
I don't know, dude.
Oh, man, it's great. This guy's got good things on the horizon, I can tell you. Laris Strong, the foot fetish man himself. I think it's funny. I'm sure George R. R. Martin didn't do this on purpose, but the two, like, spy mastery manipulator people...
I was going to say, like, Little
Varys. Varys and Laris.
I think I equated Laris more so toward Littlefinger than I did
Varys. Just because I just meant more of, like, you know, he's a spy master, and he's a secret knower and stuff, and that's... And I just think it's funny that, like, there was Lord Varys.
What was Laris's role? Master of Coin? Or he was Keeper of Whispers or something?
He was just kind of like,
what are these fucking roles? Master. I was trying to, like, find out on the small council who was what.
So, I'm about to sneeze, but I'll do my best. Hold on. Oh, God.
Here we go. Bless you.
Thank you. So we have Corlys Velaryon, who was Lord of Ships, or Lord of the Tides, until he took some damage in the Stepstones and was out for...
That's a lot of damage.
It's a lot of damage. And then it became Jason Lannister was, like, the Lord of Ships, Tides, whatever. And then... Oh, God. Lord Strong was one of the... people, Lord Beesbury. I don't know. I don't think we're supposed to really care about who
their
was
roles
in
aren't
each
as
role.
Important as they were in the last series, is what you're saying?
Basically, not right now anyway. But the big one was Corlys Velaryon. And then obviously, speaking of which, can I tell you, I love when it gets into like the geography of the world and it gets into like who controls what. So in the last episode of the season, when Corlys comes to the war meeting, right, and you know he's been like out, you know, fighting for his life after being wounded in the Stepstones and stuff, and he's looking over the painted table, and he goes like, "Well, a consequence of me almost dying was that, by the way, we control the Stepstones now, and we set up a garrison, and we control the trade." To and from Esso, so the Narrow Sea is ours. And he's like laying it out, and he's like, we can cut off all incoming import and supply and travel to King's Landing. We can set up a blockade in the Gullet, and Rhaenys is like, I will patrol the Gullet. By the way, Rhaenys, too many characters to really just delve into each one of them, but she gets her standout moment. Busts out, does a little bit of mass murder in the dragon pits.
She don't kill anybody, though.
I'm guarantee you a lot of people died when Maelys.
I'm just saying.
The Red Queen busts out of that from the underground.
Yeah, but like she had the opportunity to burn everybody else alive. But she didn't.
You know, she stepped on like 20 people just leaving that place.
Yeah, but 20 who's?
Exactly. Who? The little people.
We need the big guys.
Every kingdom is built on a foundation of bodies.
Where the hell did you get that quote?
My brain. But then Corlys Velaryon coming in and be like, hey, we can win this war. We can just cut off all their access. We own this. This is ours. And I just love seeing shit like that. I'm like, there's real strategy. Like this is so well thought out. Just terrific. And I don't know if you had anyone else you really wanted to highlight, but the last one I want to talk about is little aim in one eye. Everyone's favorite sociopath.
I don't know that I saw the progression of his character go in the way that it did.
I loved it. I loved he comes, he's the kid, he's being bullied and stuff.
Did you ever
and
then read by this book, the
Fire and Blood?
No, well, yeah, Fire and Blood.
Yeah, I got it here on my bookshelf.
I was going to say, so like you knew that this was going to be like his, like,
I had absolutely no idea. Yeah, I was like, oh god, I can't wait to see when they were making fun of him in the dragon pit and stuff. I was like, this is why you always make friends with the weird kid in school. So you always treat the weird kids nice because then they turn into monsters.
I'll tell you what, he wasn't weird though. He just wanted a dragon.
He did, and then he nutted up and went and got the biggest dragon. Fucking great scene. And he came back and listen, I get it. It was their mother's dragon, Bela and Reyna, when they were like, hey, that was our dragon. And he's like, I don't see your fucking name on it.
Not anymore.
Which is like, yeah, if you wanted that dragon, you should have gone and claimed it. You know, dragons you don't write your name on your dragon. And he went, he got Vhagar, tough shit. This is the world we live in.
Yeah.
And dude lost his eye. But man, like, I love that line. He's like, I lost an eye, but I gained a dragon. It's fair trade. Even Otto Hightower's like, yeah, the kid's right.
I would say it's, very even. That whole entire scene, because that is the one where they get neck and neck. I was looking for the painting that I felt like it reminded me of, and it was definitely not the betrayal of Jesus, but the betrayal of Julius Caesar, like Julius Caesar's assassination.
Yes, yeah, to Brute.
Based the Ides of March, all the wonderful stuff. That's the end of that thought. But in terms of like characters, I feel like all of my favorites have been put kind of to the test. There was a scene of characters that became interesting. You remember these twins that were...
Eric and Arik.
Yeah, their role in that one episode where they all had to find Aemon.
Aegon.
Aegon, excuse me. See, I'm making the same mistake too.
It's okay.
One, I hated this Aegon. This Aegon sucked.
Yeah, he does kind of suck.
And also, there's like a Joffrey around somewhere. Who has a Joffrey? Child named Joffrey.
The Rhaenyra and Laenor.
Oh, God. That is, like, why?
Because his gay lover was named Joffrey.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah, and Chris Nicole caved his skull in.
I forgot that was his name. See, not important. What was important was that his skull got caved in. Regardless, I thought the role that these twins played in terms of, like, the finding of Aegon... And then also you had, like, Sir Criston Cole, and then you had Aemon, also on the hunt as well, provided an interesting kind of scene that... Well, I guess it was between Otto and Allison. They all had their own kind of, I would say, agendas in terms of finding the king, right?
Yeah.
They all played interesting roles. Also, this other gentleman that was a Kingsguard member as well, but that did swear his allegiance to Rhaenyra. He was a pretty thoughtful guy. You know what I'm talking about? With the mustache.
Yeah, played by Graham McTavish.
Yeah, that was a solid character.
Anytime I see Graham McTavish and stuff, I'm like, this guy, I love this guy. He's great. But man, hey, let me tell you that, let's talk about where this season ends, because everything was on the tipping point. Everyone's like, okay, it's a cold war, and let's, you know, we want to keep it cold. We want to keep it icy. And then, Aemond had to go and be a little prick and try and scare his nephew, but oops, it turns out dragons aren't sentient motorcycles. They have a mind of their own.
Yeah, not very pretty.
That whole scene, talk about tense. I love the shot of Arax flying. You see him from below, and the little lightning flashes, and you see the shadow of Vhagar. And you're just like, oh, the size difference between these two is horrifying.
I'm trying to find this meme that I thought I sent you a while ago, just because I think it was like a little bit of a poem.
The memes that came out of that final episode were spectacular.
They were, I was gonna say they were like pretty gnarly. When you think about it, I'm really upset that we have to wait probably like a good 2 years before we.
It's gonna be about 2 years.
Like the continuation of what the hell we just saw, because that poor little boy did not. He did not deserve it.
Man,
our Aegon. He was Aegon, right? Aegon died.
Well, no, that was Lucerys.
Lucerys, who the fuck? All right, the other Aegon is his older brother.
That's Jacerys. Aegon the Third, or Aegon the Younger, is still very much a child.
Oh, he's the one that was born of Daemon.
Yes.
Okay. Jesus Christ. This show is all these names. Everybody like the first, the second, the conqueror, the peaceful, the passive, indeed, the hungry, you know, like...
Yeah.
That's just Game of Thrones.
Oh, man. But yeah, dude, that, and then just, the look on Aemond's face after Vhagar had his snack. I was just, you can tell he's like, ooh, did I just make the war hot?
Yeah.
and gets to fly back and be like, hey, I may have committed a war crime or two while I was away.
I'll tell you what, it's the look on Rhaenyra's face that closes the episode that I think has me the most hyped. I do want to ask you, what are you looking forward to come future of the show?
Well, it's hard to say anything without spoilers. I'm just looking for a lot of the back and forth. A lot of the new characters we're going to get in season two. Hugh Hammer, Nettles... there's going to be a lot of fun characters that come up, a lot of interesting stuff. And long term, I don't think we'll get this until maybe season 3, maybe season 4. Probably, I don't know exactly when we'll get it because the timeline's a little whatever. But I won't say anything except the battle over the God's Eye. That's all I'll say.
Battle over the God's Eye. See, yes. I have no context for what any of that means. In terms of myself, I feel like I am very much looking forward to seeing, let's say, the other elements of the Westeros houses being more involved in this, and how they, what their roles are in the House of the Dragon storyline.
For sure.
If you say that there's a return to Winterfell, that sounds interesting. There was one name drop of the Wall. I'm like, this is interesting. Yep.
Oh yeah, Allison was like, one more word and I will send you to the Wall. And I'm like, shit.
Right, ooh, that existed then.
It's hundreds of years before anything exciting happens there.
I would like to see Allison's idea of like what the last words from Viserys were to her, like what her interpretation of the Song of Ice and Fire are. And then finally, I think I would like to see the relationship dynamic between Daemon and Rhaenyra, how that is further affected by the loss of her son from her former marriage, and as well as like what that means for their role to Aegon you know, like the one that she thinks should be king.
Yeah, you know, again, it's hard to talk about this without going into spoilers. I don't want to ruin anything for anyone.
These are just my own expectations. Like, these are just questions I'm hoping, like, we'll see moving forward.
I will just say, it is not a happy story going forward. There's a lot of characters who you are going to get attached to, and it won't end well for a good many of them.
That sounds like very much Game of Thrones.
It's the way it is, you know. I mean, just yeah, it's hard to say, but I will definitely be there for it because this show, this is, you know, I just love fantasy, man. Give me some dragons, give me some knights, give me some fucking political shenaniganery. And
I think the show traverses it bridges fantasy and like family drama in such a way that it does you almost forget there's no indoor for plumbing. Sure. You know what
I'm
saying?
No, it's great.
Don't forget
it's
that like, they don't take showers and that there's no electric vehicles outside.
It's like Succession, but if Kendall Roy had a fucking nuclear bomb in his back pocket. And that's I feel like they even said like it's Succession but with dragons. And you know what?
I love that Succession as my favorite show on television right now. This is actually tied for like good second. There's something about HBO, their programming is just the best.
And you know what's great is we're not even done with this like season of television. Andor's got like 3 or 4 more episodes left. I'm sure there are others. Willow's going to be starting soon, the Willow miniseries. I'm kind of excited for that. Tales of the Jedi has been going on. They just announced the cast for The Acolyte, Star Wars The Acolyte, which could be pretty cool. January 15th, The Last of Us begins.
Oh, that is true.
People have already said... January is The Last of Us. February is The Mandalorian. So there's about a 10 to 12.
Also, Succession is in spring of next year.
But there's just like this, like I think it's like a 10-week block where it's just like Pedro Pascal owns television.
He, you know, I will say, yeah, he will be back, which I mean is very much well needed. I have been missing him.
He's a great, you know, Game of Thrones alumni. Always wear a helmet, kids.
Well, Zach, this has been a lovely conversation about House of the Dragon. If you haven't checked it out, it is all available now on HBO Max and all other HBO versions of programming, right?
Go out there and get yourself some hot D.
Is that what we're calling it?
Hot D. Yeah, it's not G-O-T. It's not got. We didn't got. It's you come and you get some hot D.
Oh, okay. I just looked at the acronym and I'm like, oh yeah.
Your weekly dose of hot D.
Okay. I can get behind that.
Hot D in the morning.
As always, you can find Scriptor Screen in the wonderful hot D that we provide on our website at www.scriptorscreen.com or anchor.fm/scriptorscreen. There you can find all of our past, present, and future Hot D episodes. Follow us at Scriptor Screen on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube for all future updates on the show. Now, we leave you with our favorite House of the Dragon haircuts. Zach, favorite House of the Dragon haircut?
Ooh, Damon after the time skip, so it's like kind of like shoulder length.
Mm-hmm.
That or Corlys Velaryon.
I was gonna say Corlys Velaryon, or what about Damon when he's just covered in blood from the crab feeder, like right, like he has like his blood stained white hair. Like I'm actually a big fan of that look.
It's a good look.
Yeah. Also, no, Christian Cole had like solid haircut throughout the entirety of like his like screen time.
He did. Yep. I mean, listen, Fabian Frankel can't argue with genetics.
Yeah, no, he's a handsome looking guy. Thank you so much. Have a wonderful rest of your day.
Geros Illas. to High Valyrian for bye. Most people are blacks,